Welcome to The Creative Shift. My name is Dan Blank, author of the book Be the Gateway and founder of WeGrowMedia.com. Today, I'm really excited to welcome Kaylin Barron to the podcast. She has a new book out called Cinderella is Dead, and we talk about the journey to that publication. And I think this is something that's going to resonate with a lot of writers and authors and artists and creators. Because her story is, in many ways, you know, quote-unquote, typical, in that it was a journey. She had to query around 70 times to find her agent. That's 70. And it was about a four-year process from writing the book to finding an agent to pitching it to publishers, going into submission, to finding the right publisher, to signing the deal, and then to the process from there of putting it out there. And we really slow down and talk about that process. And we talk about the flip side of it too, which was so moving to me, where she talked about hearing from readers and that the readers are seeing themselves in this book. It is helping them to feel seen and that there's a space for them. And she said, if nothing else ever happens for me, that will be enough. And that was just so moving to me. This whole idea that we create, not just because we have a story within us, because this is something we're driven to do, but because this work that we create has an impact on people's lives. We cover so much more in this podcast, especially her amazing background with music and dance and as an opera singer. This was such an inspiring episode. This is Kaylin Barron. Hey, everyone. This is Dan Blank. I'm excited to be chatting with Kaylin Barron. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
So your bio is fascinating to me. I grew up in a house where you could be creative. So I grew up as the art kid, and I really tried all these different things growing up. And as I grew older, I found that's very unusual. As I read through your bio, so I'm viewing you as an author and a writer, your background is littered with the arts and these interesting different things. What was the very start of that? Did it come from your parents? Did it come, you know, before high school? Where was the start of anything with creativity with you?
So my mom is an artist. She is, she's a painter, she's a sculptor, she makes jewelry, so she's always been into really, those kinds of creative pursuits from the time I was a kid. And my dad was super into music. I think that's where I get my love of music from. He played saxophone in high school and college. And and there was always music in the house. And so, you know, music is definitely my first love. So there's always been, creative people around in my space. And I think that, I was encouraged to, pursue those things, as a kid and, going into high school and college. So lots of creative people around me all the time.
When you were young, was it a matter of you picked up clarinet because you had to pick something in fifth grade, or you went to ballet school because everyone else was doing it, or was it something other than that?
Clarinet was definitely like, you can play the clarinet or you can play the flute. And I was like, well, I don't want to play the flute. So, but I took to it really, really, quickly. And that was, a lot of fun. But ballet was something that, just because I was so into, theater, even as a kid, just watching musicals on TV and dancing, that was kind of my thing. So going into ballet was definitely, your parents put you in ballet when you're a kid and you maybe don't take it seriously, but I always was like, oh, I want to do this. This is what I want to do. It was great. So I was probably in middle school when I started trying to take that a little bit more seriously. I auditioned at Oregon Ballet Theater School for Dance. I got in there on like a like a grant, I guess. And so I studied dance there for a while, but I didn't pursue it professionally. There were some kind of roadblocks there, but I have a love of ballet that just has never gone away. And I think that also plays into my love of theater, like I said. So yeah.
Dance, I spent a lot of time, and I've spent a lot of time in Manhattan, and, you know, I've known dancers, and in high school, we had a dance program, actually, we had an art school, and in Manhattan, you've always seen that. Dance feels like a particularly brutal art. There's this weird duality to it from just a consumer of, it looks flowing and light and elegant, and of course, there's many different kinds of dance. But the physical toll on people is, like, worse than most sports, by far, it seems like. Is that the case?
It is. It's very hard on your body. It's hard on your mind as well, especially if you're Black, like me, because there's just like, you know, any other thing, there are these kind of systems that are set up that are very oppressive to people. Like me. And that was one of the roadblocks. That's kind of why it didn't go any further. I got told while I was in ballet school that, you know, Black girls just don't get to do this, unless you want to be in the background, unless you want to be, you know, in the, you know, the side characters, the kind of fill-ins. You're not going to get to be a principal dancer. That just doesn't happen, for you. And so, that really kind of knocked me for a loop when I, you know, somebody tells you that when you're what, like 13, 14 years old. And so I still danced after that, but I did not pursue it professionally anymore after that. It's a lot of work. Like you said, you know, it kind of looks from the outside. So it's so beautiful and it's so, but the training involved and the discipline involved is a lot. And it is a kind of combination of body and mind, together. But yeah, it's definitely something, it's one of those things I try not to live with like regrets, but it's definitely one of those things that I always have in the back of my mind about like what could have been. So there's a lot of ballet in the books that I'm working on coming up. So, you know, that's kind of my way back to it.
It's interesting because I was going to ask about this idea of like a lot of kids don't grow up with the idea that you can be something creative for a living, even if it's like part of a larger picture, maybe not the main thing. And it was interesting because I was going to ask about that because it seemed like you had that support from family, this idea of, yeah, you can pursue this and we can see where it goes. And you had it in your mind that one can do that. That feels huge. It's interesting that you had that magical thing. And I guess this is something, it's not that's not talked about, but it's something that we don't always talk about enough, is that within any industry, there are these roadblocks. Like in the industry, here you are, you made it. You're with your people who love this thing. You're surrounded by mentors and coaches. And yet they literally put a big roadblock.
Yeah. So I was encouraged, you know, by my dad. My mom wanted me to have a fallback. You know, she wanted me to have some kind of, you know, something else to fall back on. But my dad was more like, you can do this. It's going to be hard. There are going to be difficulties that maybe other people don't face. But he was like, if you want to do this, if you are, you know, if you're serious about it, then you have to jump in with both feet. And so I listened to him, but even though I, you know, at kind of in the process of writing Cinderella is Dead and deciding that I was going to take this book out to query, to get an agent, that this was going to be the book to do that, it, you know, they don't tell you about the things that you should expect, right? You know, you're going to get rejections, you know, you're going to go through, you know, 100 queries, like all of that. They don't prepare you for the, we don't want a story about a Black girl. We don't want a story about a queer Black girl. Or why don't you make this story more about, you know, a normal, quote unquote, normal girl. That doesn't get, you know, talked about as much. And so those roadblocks, you know, those start early on. That was the kind of attitude that I was getting before I even started querying, when I was in my writer's group, kind of sharing chapters and just kind of, you know, talking out ideas and things like that. It was like, well, you can't, this is just for you, right? You're just going to like write this book and maybe self-publish, which is not a knock on people who self-publish, because that is extremely hard. There's a lot of work that goes into it. I respect that hugely. But it was, they were telling me that you can never get an agent or an editor with this book, with Cinderella is Dead, because of what it's about. And so those kind of, and then when you, you know, and then when you go to query, there's a lot of rejections that you, you know, you try not to take personally. You grow a thick skin, but there are some that sting because they're very specifically about, you know, the content of the book and their, and opinions about who wants to read that or who doesn't want to read that, who the audience is. So those roadblocks are there, and they are, you know, I think about how fortunate I am, because it's a lot of hard work, but it's also sometimes a little bit of luck. I feel very fortunate, but I also think about all the people who maybe ran into those roadblocks and stopped. And that just kills me, because they're, you know, we're out here, we're creating, we have these wonderful projects, and I don't, you know, you get told, nobody wants to read that, write something else. And that's hard.
It feels like the struggle, this idea of knowing what your creative vision is, it's such a hard thing to begin with. Like you said, you chose this book to go out with. Mm-hmm. That's already a huge thing. Then to get, and I have to imagine that you experienced both overt people saying these things that are like just totally offensive and stopping the thing, and then all the subtle things where it's right. Like, well, they didn't quite say it. They sort of skirted it.
Right.
And then everything in between, and in between that, I bet you're filling in blanks. You could get a thing that's not saying it, but you're like, well, the last two said this, or they kind of saying that to you, but they're not willing to say it.
Right. Yeah. There's very blunt, kind of rejection. That's like, there's not a market for queer Black girls as the main character. That's almost easier to kind of sit aside and say, okay, I don't need to listen to that, because that's very clearly, you know, homophobia and racism all mixed into one, you know, so that's, I can kind of set that aside. But there's the ones where it's kind of like, well, retellings are overdone, they're oversaturated, but I'm just kind of like, well, where are the ones about Black girls with, you know, queer Black girls in the lead? Where are those? I haven't even seen that. Like, where is that? You're telling me it's overdone, it's, you know, the market is oversaturated, but I've never seen it. So what they're saying is, we have a lot of other stories, retellings that are by white writers with white main characters, and there's a lot of those, and maybe we should try something else. But it's like, I haven't even had my shot at it yet, and you're telling me it's over. So that is, and that's the kind of in between, you know, thing. And then, yeah. And then there's other rejection that's just kind of like, I'm not connecting with this. I can't, you know, I don't, it doesn't really, I can't connect. And I'm like, well, I get that. You have to love what you represent. I understand that to a point, but also, you know, what do the readers connect with? There's a whole, you know, section of people out here who don't have the representation that they need and that they want, and they deserve stories like this. And so, it's all those kinds of things. And it's hard to kind of just keep pushing forward. It can be a challenge.
So I have to imagine that the thing that holds you back, this idea that all these people are telling you one thing, at some point when you find the collaborators that partner with you, that thing that everyone else says is the thing we don't want from you becomes the reason the other people say, oh my gosh, either we've been looking for something like this, or this is something that is so different, it's engaging us. Was that the case?
Yeah. So when I found my agent, Jamie, it was kind of like this. It was just like something clicked, and she wasn't even saying like, oh, this is going to, you know, this is going to fill a void. She was like, I read this story, and this story needs to be out there. People need to read this. There are people, and that you know, that is, and my agent is queer as well. So we're sitting, you know, we have this connection and we're just like, okay, you know, this story can be told. People will want to read this. There are people out there waiting for this. And that was kind of like, it was like somebody flipped a switch and I was like, that's how I feel. And now I met somebody else who feels that way. So like now we're on a team, like, let's go, you know? So, and then also when we went on sub and we got a bite from Bloomsbury, it was like my editor there, Mary Kate, it was the same kind of thing. It was like, this just clicks. We can do this. And so now I have this team and it's like, you know, it's very surreal and very, you know, humbling. And I just, you know, I feel very fortunate that things kind of lined up the way they did.
I always think about that process because what you described there, it's like magical. It's this idea that you had this thing, you go through all of that. And I always think of that in between. I always think of when does someone stop? And you'd mentioned the 100 queries. I read a blog post once where I used an author's example, and I think that was the number was like 74 queries, and they got the agent. And I wrote it out because I was really trying to think of query 28, query 39, query 54. And like, you are so far past your A-list at that point. Not that there's like any, but that whole idea where when you first started out, you didn't say, here's the first 100 people I'm going to query, and then I've got another 100, you know?
Right. Yeah. And it was, you know, it was probably around 70-ish, you know, for me. Yeah. And I got, you know, I got some partial requests. I got, a couple full requests. And yeah, it was right around 50 where I was kind of like, let me go back and just look at the manuscript again and just make sure that it's like the best it could possibly be. And, you know, there were some times there where I paused and kind of went back and just, you know, made sure it was everything that I wanted it to be. And then when I finally, you know, those last like, you know, 20, 25 queries were brutal, but you know, and 70 honestly is not that many when I'm talking to, you know, my writer colleagues, that's not even, that's pretty good. Like if you get an agent in 70, then hey, you know, that's great. Like, so, but it feels daunting. It really does, because there's this added, you know, like we said, there's all of these kinds of rejections for all these different reasons. And some of them are easy to brush off and some are not. So yeah, it's definitely, they say you're in the query trenches when you're out there, and that's what it feels like. You feel like it's just this constant kind of battle to keep, you know, moving forward.
There's something funny about that process too, I always think about. And I think every creative field has that idea of, here you are living your life. You have probably a whole bunch of other responsibility. It's a random Tuesday and you've been doing this for X number of months. And now you got to try again. You got to get rejected again. You've got to second guess again, that sort of thing. That it's a funny thing. What was the general timeline of that process for you, if you happen to remember it even on a vague level?
Let's see. I drafted Cinderella is Dead in 2016, and then I started querying at the end of that year. So I started drafting in like January, and I felt like I had a really solid draft by probably August or September maybe of that year. And so I decided to query, and it took me from the end of 2016, let's see. So probably September, October, November, December, January, about 6 months that I queried. And I tried to do it in like small batches, you know, every like 2 weeks I would go, you know, I would do some research and query, you know, 10 or 15 kind of in a bunch. Yeah, it was, you know, 6 months, and like, I'm also, you know, a mom. So I'm, you know, my kids are running around and I'm, you know, living, like you said, just doing my everyday thing. And I'm still, you know, just over here trying to get this book out there. So, and the rejection is, you know, you can't be crying at your computer and your, you know, your kids want pancakes for breakfast. It's like, you know, you have to, you know, get up and keep going. So, I met my agent, in February of 2017. So yeah, about six or seven ish months there on Query. Yeah.
And that was three and a half years mm-hmm. ago. This is another part where, you know, the book is on the shelf behind you as we talk, and it was just released at the time of this recording.
Yes.
So again, so that was like, you know, the writing it all, the querying, meeting, you know, these people who are now supporting and partnering with you. And then there's another 3 years.
Yes. Yes. And that is another thing that people don't always talk about. It's kind of like you get your agent, boom, like you're getting a book deal. Like it's not how it works. And that time frame can obviously, you know, be shorter or longer or whatever. It's very, you know, it's different for everybody. But for me, it was a while. It was probably, so let's see. In February of 2017, we started to do some revisions, and we didn't go on sub until, let's see, the end of 2017. So probably a little less than a year, maybe 10 months, like editing, revising, really just, you know, polishing the story, making it. And we went through a pretty significant revision during that time, some big world building changes. And then let's see. So at the end of 17, we went on sub to 8 editors. And by the end of that year, we gotten passes from 6. So at the end of 2017, we stopped completely and went back to the manuscript to look at it again. We did, you know, we read it out loud. We got some beta readers. We tried to just, you know, and we didn't really feel like it needed a whole lot more. We thought it was pretty solid. So we did a few just little, you know, tweaks, and then we went back on sub. And let's see, we didn't go back on sub until 2018, until August of 2018. And let's see. Yeah, so somewhere around, I'm trying to think of the timeline. But yeah, like in 2018, that's when we got an email from Bloomsbury. It used to be in third person, I had to change it, and I changed the whole manuscript, all, you know, almost 100,000 words. And then, you know, Bloomsbury was like, we're in. So that was at the end of the year. That was right around the end of the year there. And I signed my contract like right around the beginning of 2019. Yes. So, and now here we are. So,
yeah, I think you shared a photo on Instagram of signing the contract, which I love when people take a photo of that moment because it's such a milestone.
Yeah.
You said something so interesting in there, which was, because earlier you were getting negative feedback or just getting no feedback where people partnering, and you're like, I know my vision, I'm sticking with this. And I think it's so important what you said, that when you found a collaborator with your agent, and even with anything that Bloomsbury was giving back, these were supporters. And it's interesting to think about the distinction, because then you did revise. You did spend a lot of time rethinking, going back through, taking feedback. I just think that's such an important distinction between when you do it because you're getting negative feedback where people are not on your side,
right,
versus people who really are on your team.
Right. And that is the key. That's something that I wish I had maybe really thought about earlier on, because I was thinking, you know, in the beginning before I met my agent, like, okay, I'm going to have to like do this, and I don't want to, because I really like the story the way it is. And, you know, trying to figure out whose, you know, critique I could trust. And, you know, and that's the thing, not everybody is out here trying to help you. Some people just, you know, have a very limited view of what a YA fantasy should be. And so, but when it was coming from Jamie and when it was coming from Mary Kate, it was like, this is how we can make this story, you know, better, or just, you know, kind of clean things up a little. So it was, it definitely was coming from a different place. a place of, you know, being supportive, wanting this book to be the absolute best that it could be. And so I was all for that.
Love that. So how did you view the idea of the launch, the idea of there's going to be a day when this comes out? What do I need to do to prepare? What are the partners doing? Because this is something I talked to a lot of writers about. And it can be terrifying because a lot of times a writer will wait for, let's say, the publisher to just tell them what they're going to do. How did your expectations get set with that?
Yeah, so this was a, you know, I think in the beginning of this year, you know, we were talking about, you know, what the launch was going to look like and how we were going to, you know, what kind of things we were going to be doing tour wise. And then COVID happened and it kind of changed, you know, how we approached it. We knew it was going to have to be a virtual thing. And so I think that really, you know, I was really worried about that. I wasn't sure that this was even a good time to do this. I mean, people, you know, people are really suffering. This is really, you know, just a really, really, we're in the middle of a pandemic. This is not a vacation. You know, it's a, you know, we're in the middle of this crisis. And so it was feeling very like, should I even promote this? Should I even be out here doing this? But as we've kind of settled into this new normal, you know, which is everything is virtual, you know, we're doing Zoom and Skype and, you know, all of these things. We started just kind of looking at how to do these launch events with bookstores and with other authors, virtually. And I am really happy to say that it's worked out really well. Like it's really, you know, and it's allowed more people access to me and to my work because everybody can, you know, somebody might not be able to come and meet me, you know, in San Antonio at the bookstore. Like maybe they can't get there, but you can jump on my Instagram, you know what I mean? On Instagram Live and we can have a chat or we can, you know, we can have a Zoom call. I did one yesterday and it was, you know, I got to do a reading for the first time and it was, you know, it was fabulous. So I am rolling with it. That's what I'm doing. I'm just like, you know what, if that's how we have to do it, how can we make it the best that thing that it can be, you know? So that's all you can do, really.
I love that. I like the point you made about, and I've talked to so many writers about it, and it's interesting to think about how you had to think through it. Of there's so much going on in the world. I mean, so many different things related to this. You know, is this the right time to share my book or my voice or my vision? And I don't know exactly how you thought about it, but sometimes people they don't want to be self-centered. They don't want to say, like, I'm going to put this amazing, entertaining thing out there. Like, maybe it's not the right time. And also there could be the other thing too, which is what, you know, I've worked so hard for this for so long. Is it better if I wait because I'll have more opportunity to really reach readers?
Yeah. I definitely, struggled with that, but ultimately I think the way that I kind of looked at it was, yeah, I've worked really hard. And I, am very proud of this book. And I think that it just came down to, you know, I think I'm one of those people who just kind of think that things happen, for a reason and that if this is the way that it has to be, then I'm okay with that. And so I feel like what's for me is always going to be for me. Like, and so I didn't feel like I had to wait or I had to, I didn't think it would make a difference. So I kind of looked at it like that. Like, here's this thing that I've worked on. It might be able to, you know, give somebody a little bit of a respite from everything that's going on. Maybe you want to just kind of escape into this fantasy for a little while. Like that's, you know, I think that's because I've been doing that. I've been reading, I've been watching movies. I've been trying to just kind of, you know, do some self-care, which for me just looks like reading a bunch of, you know, old books and, you know, just hanging out, you know? So I'm like, you know, let's just go ahead and do this because, you know, this, it felt like it was okay to kind of move forward. And, my community, you know, the writing community, has been so supportive and, yeah, it just, everything just kind of lined up But it's funny, you know, not funny, but it's, you know, it's kind of this thing where I'm doing this, all this promotion, and I'm, you know, seeing this book go out into the world, but I'm also, you know, I've also been out here, you know, protesting. I've also been out here, you know, making sure that people don't forget Breonna Taylor's name. You know, we're talking about George Floyd. We're talking about all of these things that are happening, in the world. And so, you know, it's like, that's kind of my existence, is balancing all of those things all at the same time. And so that's not hugely different for me now. But yeah, it's a lot.
Well, it's interesting, and I mean, I know everyone's going through it in their own way, but you're occupying these different identities and different goals while largely sitting in your living room. It's like it's sort of by and large, you know, taking. Is that a funny thing to wear those hats? Because, you know, you said you've these kids around, you're at this huge milestone as an author where you probably would have been on tour, you would have been out there. Is that, I don't know if the question is it different than you expected, or is it just difficult in general, or is it just you're going to do what you're going to do anyway?
Yeah, that's my attitude. I'm like, this is how it is, because I could definitely, like, you know, sit in the closet and cry about, you know, not being able to go somewhere or do something, but it's just not, I don't feel like that. I feel like this is how it is, and I really, you know, I want my community to be safe. I want people to not get sick. I don't want somebody risking, you know, themselves to come out and try and do something that's, you know, some kind of public event. I'm not going out to a public event because I have kids. You know what I mean? So I'm okay with this. I'm okay with sitting here and doing everything that I can do from home, because I just am. So I'm okay with that.
So we're on the other side of the book coming out. Is there any has there been anything that surprised you or been a highlight of kind of the before versus the after? Because the before is so long and so small in a way, because it's in your head or it's with you and your agent, your editor, and now it's out there. What has that experience been like?
Yeah, it has been, it's been really wonderful so far, pretty surreal. I think the biggest thing that I, you know, not that I didn't anticipate, but I just, when it finally started happening, I was just like, wow, it's, you know, readers reaching out to me, you know, emailing or messaging me and just being like, I read this book in one sitting and I saw myself for the first time in a book like this. I don't know how to say thank you. And I'm just over here crying, just ugly crying. You know what I mean? Like, it, because that's, you know, before I was thinking about book deals or agents, like, I wrote this book because I wanted my, you know, this version of my younger self who just desperately wanted to see a black girl in a ball gown, you know, on the front of a book, being the hero of the story. Like, that's what I want. That's what I wrote this book for. That feeling of just wanting to see that there was a space for me. And so now I'm getting people telling me, I see that there's a space for me. I belong here in this YA fantasy world. And that's, if nothing else ever happens for me, that will have been enough. Those messages, those readers saying that to me, that will have been enough for me.
You know, you talk about this purpose, and it's so interesting because it's not just you wanted to craft a story, you know, that sort of thing, but there's also these layers to it and this purpose to it. And I feel like for a lot of writers, they either shy away from it or they don't know how to think about that. And I think in other arts, what if you're again, you know, if you're a musician, if you're an actor, if you're a performer of any sort, you think about the audience in a very big way, their reaction, and you kind of want that engagement. A lot of people don't know how to think about that with writing, that idea of a reader reaching out to them, or really that moment where the moment is not publication, which is awesome. The moment is what you just said. Like, that is like so moving, that idea of how you have changed someone's life through the book.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, as a kid, you know, I love to read and I read everything I could get my hands on. I didn't have any restrictions on what I was allowed to read, at all. And so, but even though I was reading, you know, when I was younger, I was reading Nancy Drew, and I was reading the, what was it, like Ramona Quimby series, you know, and then I get older and I'm reading a lot of Anne Rice, a lot of Stephen King, because I just love scary stories and, you know, all that kind of stuff. But this whole time, though, not seeing people like me in these books in ways that are for us, it more feels like it's about us, and these kind of tropes and stereotypes about what Black people, you know, look like, what they sound like, how they act. It's, you know, seeing those representations, you know, when I decided I was going to write this book, you know, the thing in the back of my mind in the beginning was, what kind of book would I have wanted to see? What kind of book would this younger version of myself, who was at the library trying to find something that kind of maybe, you know, someone who maybe looked like me, or maybe somebody who, you know, was queer, and Black, you know, like what, where are these characters? I was looking for that. And so when I wrote this book, it was like, you know, I have an opportunity here to put queer Black girls front and center, and they can be the heroes, and they can be the love interests, and they can be adored and cared for. And, you know, I really wanted, you know, queer Black girls to read this book and say, I feel seen. Like, and that's it, you know, and that is, that does it right there. That's it, you know, like that, I don't care about anything else. Like, other things are nice, and, you know, there's a lot of recognition, but it's like those readers who have another choice now, because that's all I, you know, that's what I want. I'm not saying my book is the end all be all. It's just another choice, another, you know, option for you. So yeah, I mean, that's it. Yeah.
I mean, this is something I think about all the time, and I love that this is the age we live in. And to use like Hollywood terminology, which I know very little about Hollywood, it's like, as a writer, you have this incredible ability to give yourself like green light authority to say, this is the book I'm going to write. And then final cut of saying, no, I this is right. So when you're getting rejections, or when people are saying, well, whatever they're saying, I just think that's so powerful. And it's this idea that just you and your mind and the computer get to define that. And it's so inspiring to think of you had that and you sort of saw that through. And it's a, not against the idea of all that, like, well, the market this, the market that, but it's like, this is how markets change.
Right. And, you know, storytelling is adaptive and it's fluid. And, you know, it just felt like, why couldn't this be the way that I write this story? Why not? You know? And so, you know, I don't ever want to make it seem like I'm like the first person to ever do, you know, this thing, because I definitely found, you know, pieces of myself in other works, but I just wanted to do something that I was just like, okay, I'm all in on this. This is going to be, you know, Black queer girls, and there's going to be more than one Black queer love interest, and everybody's going to be, you know, it's just like I could put all these things in, and I was just like, my gut was like, you know, my gut feeling was just like, just do this, and make it everything that you want it to be, because you would have wanted to read it when you were a kid, and there's going to be somebody out there who this story is going to resonate with. So yeah, so I was all in.
So how do you take that, the experience you've been going through and pre-launch and launch, how does that affect what you're working on now or working on next?
So because there was quite a bit of time between, like, when we were on sub, I wrote other books. Like, you know, I was like, okay, let's just, you know, to keep my mind, you know, occupied. So I wrote two other novels while we were on sub,
Love that.
and I was still in that, I was still, you know, in a similar kind of mindset, where I was like, okay, this is going to be just a story that happens to have all Black queer characters, and it's not going to be like a big deal. That's just going to be what it is. It's going to be who they are. There's not going to be, you know, and it's going to be fantasy, because that's my thing. And so, So yeah, so my next book, you know, that comes out next year is a YA fantasy contemporary. Yeah, it has some of the same themes, but it's going to be fun, but you know, it's, you know, it's still, I'm still out here just, you know, putting queer Black girls front and center, because again, we deserve all the stories, you know, all the different kinds of stories, you know, historical fantasy, contemporary fantasy, urban fantasy, whatever, we, you know, all of that. So, I feel really lucky. I mean, I work hard, so it's not all luck, but you know, I just feel really, really fortunate to be in this space writing these types of stories.
So we skipped over what feels to me like a really important part of your bio, because you talked about like when you did dance, you did clarinet, and then somewhere in the middle here is opera. Talk to me about this, because this is not the typical thing that you hear of a kid going to college. It's like, well, you know, yeah, of course they're studying psychology or opera. So where right. did this come in?
The short answer is Phantom of the Opera. I love musical theater, and I think the first, not maybe the second show that I ever kind of was exposed to was Phantom of the Opera. The first one was Sweeney Todd, and way too young to be seeing that show, but my mom was like, we're going to go see this. And I was like, okay. So, but I just wanted, I could maybe do that. Like, you know, and this is me just as a young person, maybe like fifth grade, sixth grade, somewhere around there, just kind of seeing something that looked really fun. And I love to sing. That's like, you know, my thing. And so, but as I got older, I was like, okay, I want to pursue this, you know, some more formal training. So I'm a classically trained mezzo soprano, and opera just kind of, I don't know. It's like one of those things where you find something and you're just like, I love that. I love everything about that. And I don't know, you know, I don't know why, it just kind of always resonated with me. And so that's, you know, and music is my first love. And so, you know, there was always this kind of pull towards all kinds of music, because my dad just listened to everything. So opera, I mean, I just, it just, you know, I just love it.
So where does that go? Because does it go, I believe you studied that in college. Where does it go after that? Because that's another thing that is such an amazing skill and passion. But to become a career, it's sort of, I have to imagine, it's like one in a million type of a thing. What did college or after college look like in terms of the arts, or you're looking at what your career is going to be, what you're going to create?
Yeah, I don't, I think I've kind of missed the boat on career, you know, opera life, but I don't think that it's too late for me to kind of pursue music. I would love to be in a Broadway show. Like I love Broadway. I just love musical theater. And so I'm like, and I love villains. So like, I'm definitely trying to be Ursula in, you know, in The Little Mermaid. I'm definitely trying to do that. So, you know, I don't know. I think that that it's still something that I might pursue, as far as, you know, music, singing, maybe, you know, I might put together a demo or something. That's still something I want to do. That's still something that I'm really passionate about. So we'll see.
And then when did taking writing seriously start? Because you have all these other interests, and this takes like, all of those are like dedicated things you've got to be doing.
Yeah.
Where did writing become a serious pursuit?
I wrote my first attempt at like a full length novel, I wrote when I was about 19. I was like, I can probably do this. So let me try it. And it was terrible, but it, you know, but it opened up a door for me. It let me kind of understand that I could be a storyteller And it didn't necessarily have to be on stage or with music. I found that I could do that with writing as well. And so between the time that I'm like, because I'm 36 now, and that was when I was 19, you know, life kind of happens in the middle and you kind of spend a lot of time focusing on other people, you know, kids, family, you know, and I think I kind of pushed those things to the back burner, and I said, I'll get to that later. I'm going to focus on, you know, my kids but I got to a point, probably when I was about 30, where I was like, I have to do both because I'm a whole person, you know, over here with all of these things that I love and I'm passionate about that I've just kind of, you know, I've set them aside because I was focusing on other things. And I had to get back to that in order to be happy, in order to feel, fulfilled in my life. And so I was like, okay, well, I'm going to go back to writing first because that's the thing that I can kind of do when I'm here with my kids and I'm, you know, trying to, you know, just, you know, work. Cause I was a preschool teacher for years and years. And so that was the thing that I kind of went back to first when I decided that I wanted to kind of pick those things back up.
I feel like that expression of I have to do both is going to resonate with like every single person listening to this because it is that struggle of all of responsibility in life that we genuinely care about. It's not negative responsibility. And then these dreams and skills and creative visions and messages and stories that we can't stop thinking about.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know, and I think also it's, you know, you kind of get the message that it's selfish to kind of pursue those things, especially if you're in a position where you're a caregiver for someone else, you know, whether it's kids or family or whatever, you know, it's kind of like, well, you can't do that because you have to focus, you have to put your attention over here. And I think for a long time, I took that to heart and I felt like I can't sit down and write a novel right now. I just can't do that because I have other things to do and I don't want to be selfish and I don't want to, but it's not selfish to pursue your dreams. You have to do that. No, and it's never too late. I'm 36. This book just came out. Like it's never too late. You know, if you have something that is, you know, that kind of sparks that fire in you, you have to find a way to pursue it because you will be happier for it.
I love that. Covered a lot. Is there anything I haven't asked about that you think we should definitely cover as it applies to any of this?
Gosh, no, we've talked about a lot. No, I just want people to know, you know, I wrote Cinderella is Dead. I hope that lots of different types of people enjoy it. I hope everybody, you know, reads it and enjoys it. And I just kind of want to, you know, let readers know and especially my queer Black girls that I see you and that you're valid and that this story is for you. It's for us. So yeah, that's all.
Thank you so much for taking the time and everything was shared. It's just totally inspiring. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much.
Kaylin's new book, Cinderella is Dead, is out now wherever books are sold. You can find her at her website, kaylinbayrin.com. That is KaylinBayron. On Twitter and Instagram, she is at kaylinbayrin. My name again is Dan Blank. You can find me on my website and blog at wegrowmedia.com and on social media at Dan Blank. Thank you so much for listening until the end.